Let's kick it off. You said you wanted to get in some draft stuff. What do you got for me as it pertains to some of these guys coming out of Penn State?
I think the thing I'm seeing from Penn State, their draft prospects, is even though they're a team that went, 11-2 or 10-3, whichever it was, and they were still a great team and a top 10 team going into their bowl game and all of that, it feels like some of their more talented guys are still being underrated coming into this draft.
What do you got on Drew and maybe some of the narrative coming out of last season with him?
I'm not a believer in any narrative where it's like, oh, it's Drew Aller's fault that Penn State's offense struggles at times, right? So we've got a set of things that we call basically the stable metrics, right? And they're more accurate predictors of quarterback performance moving forward because they have the higher sample size, right? So the first thing that stands out with Drew easily is he's very safe with the football.
College football tees, college basketball tees, whatever you need, Mercury has you covered with the best merch out there. We're talking about high quality clothing, inexpensive, and the best part is I have a 15% discount for everybody who goes and gets some right now. Use the code below, hit the link in the description, and go get your merch now. Use the code to get 15% off. What are you waiting on? Go do it.
What's going on, y'all? Christian Hackenberg here with State Media. We have a unique segment that I'm really excited to bring to you guys and looking forward to doing this more, Dalton. But we have Dalton from Pro Football Focus, PFF, as you all know. He's going to bring some metrics into it. I'm a less of a metrics guy, more of what I see, bring it out. So I think this is going to be a cool little synergy for you guys. And we have a little rundown here. Talking with some draft prospects heading into Drew and the spring game performance and potentially what we can expect into 2024. And then I think he's got a few more things up his sleeve. So Dalton, I appreciate you taking the time, man. And I'm stoked for this.
Oh, of course. And honestly, you know, Christian, the best thing, I think the big thing that I try to do is marry the metrics with the stuff that you see on the field, right? And I'm all about matching up schemes. And I think what some people forget when football gets so heavy into analytics now is the goal is to win ball games, right? And I think for me, the analytics and the grades and everything we do and people question, like, is it too much or why is it used? Well, it's used to win games, right? And I always try to marry those two aspects of it and just find out what is the difference between winning and losing, right? And this it all just gives us more information, find out how and why teams do that and just, you know, kind of focus on how teams can improve, especially. And I think, you know, especially for your school, Penn State, they could use a little more of that, just a little more of the analytical approach of like, where can we improve? Where can we improve on the margins to get on a level of Ohio State, of Michigan, of Georgia, of Alabama? Because it feels like every year they're so, so close, right? And I think using some of that information, and I think with some of the new hires they've made and things like that, they might be moving towards that. Right. But all of that information all always just comes down to winning ball games. That's all it's about. So people, you know, I think people look at all the analytics people. They just want to be right all the time. That's not the case. I don't want to be right all the time. There should be times where I'm wrong and disagreement leads to discovery and things like that. But at the end of the day, it just comes down to each team trying to use as much information as they have to win ball games.
No doubt. And I think that's a great point and not to be brushed over, because I think that football is unique in the sense that there's so many variables that go into winning ball games, right? It's not like baseball where, at least from a scientific standpoint, when you're leveraging numbers and stuff like that, there's points in the game, the way the game's played at its core, that you can limit the variables that go into what's going to potentially happen, right? Whereas when you're talking about football, I've said this before, it's the greatest team sport, it's the greatest sport ever created because of that. There's 22 guys on the field, there's coordinators in boxes, there's weather, there's all kinds of factors that you can't really put it into a concise, controlled environment to where the numbers actually tell the story. And the quote that I heard from Ron Rivera right when he left Carolina was, "Figures lie and liars figure," right? And I think that that's, to a point, great. But your side of what you're saying, where analytics can then be leveraged to better the natural sense and natural flow and kind of intangible feel of the game that goes into it and being a coach and being a player, right? And that's where I think the uniqueness is. You know what I mean? I don't think you can be too far on one side of the spectrum or the other. I think that both bring a ton of value. And like I said, man, that's why I'm stoked about this conversation. You hit the nail on the head with that. It's such a hard game to finite and say, like, these metrics tell this story, because there's so many things that go into it.
Yeah, and I love what you said about it not being the same as baseball. It's baseball's full of independent events, right? Whereas football is just, it's the sport with the most context and the most dependent variables around it, right? When we talk about, you know, I know some people get on PFF for, oh, they think, oh, running backs just don't matter at all. Well, it's not that they don't matter. It's like talent is talent. Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley and those guys matter, but they are dependent variables, right? When you talk about how good is the blocking in front of them, even watching these draft prospects, and we're going to get into some draft stuff here in a minute, certain running backs I watch in this draft where I think very highly of, and they're just not in the best situation. So they get looked over because of a lack of rushing yards and things like that. So the grades and things, you know, the big thing that the PFF grading does is try to isolate the independent variable as much as possible, right? When we look at things even for quarterbacks, right? Like, and we'll talk about Drew Aller with, you know, turnover worthy plays, right? Where it's, some people think, oh, the guy who throws the most interception is the worst quarterback. That's just not always the case. People get on Josh Allen for something like that, right? But he actually had the lowest turnover worthy play percentage of his career. So we try to isolate the quality of the individual play away from production that can be schematically inflated and, you know, a product of your situation and things like that. It's just, that's what we're trying to do. It's not, I won't tell you, it's like we get to a perfect solution of, oh, we've figured it out just like baseball where independent variables are what they are. It's never going to be like that. Football has too much 11 on 11, 22 guys all playing at the same time. It's too dependent on the guy next to you, the guy in front of you, the guy behind you. It's not going to be 100%, but we get it. We try to get it as close as we possibly can with the grading to it being an independent variable like that.
What's going on, y'all? Christian Hackenberg with State Media in the Pocket. This segment is brought to you by Utz. Utz has a phenomenal line of potato chips and other snacks. We were fortunate enough to be able to enjoy them all weekend. They kept us fed and ready for all of these interviews that you all are about to enjoy. They've been a fantastic partner of ours, and we're looking forward to continuing to bring you guys exclusive content here at State Media.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, that's great. And like you said, even running backs, like, they can directly have an impact on the quarterback's play based upon their pass protection and their skill level and capabilities in pass protection, and then being able to get out and route. Like, it's just so much, dude. So I'm excited about this. But like you said, let's kick it off. You said you wanted to get in some draft stuff. What do you got for me as it pertains to some of these guys coming out of Penn State or not anything? I'm actually excited to see here and give some feedback, at least from my perspective.
Honestly, I think the thing I'm seeing from Penn State, their draft prospects, is even though they're a team that went, 11-2 or 10-3, whichever it was, and they were still a great team and a top 10 team going into their bowl game and all of that, it feels like some of their more talented guys are still being underrated coming into this draft. It seems, I'll start right at the top with Olufashinu. Does it not feel like he, at one point he was clearly at least OT2 and in the argument for OT1 and kind of for almost no reason in the last couple of months has been dropped down. We've seen, you know, when Troy Fautanu had a great combine or Talisa Fuaga, everyone's fallen in love with him and he's a great player. Don't get me wrong. But if you're looking, if the game now is about passing and stopping the pass, there's nobody better as a pure pass protector in this draft than Olufashinu, right? An 89.2 pass protection grade over the last 2 years. That's fifth best in the FBS. And I believe third among guys who played in both of the last two seasons, right? Like we have a guy like Peter Skoronski, who only played in 2022, right? Yeah. So over the last 2 years, third best pass protecting tackle in the country in an offense that doesn't really hide their tackles. They don't really shy away from, you know, you got a lot of teams, guys have high pass pro grades because heavy RPO, heavy screen game, things that are, it's just easier. The degree of difficulty for Fashanu in the Big Ten, where there's a ton of good pass rushers, is still really, really high. No sacks allowed, and we only charted him with one quarterback hit allowed in the last 2 years. Our own Sam Monson has Fashanu actually as OT1 in this draft because pass protection is at such a bigger premium than run blocking, right? We have teams that are passing on 2 out of 3 plays in the NFL. I think he's really being underrated, and to me, he should still be a shoe-in top 15 pick, probably no later than 14 to the Saints. And the next guy I look at as a first-round guy, some people don't, who's still being underrated, flip to the other side of the ball in the trenches, is Chop Robinson. And you look at his production in the pass rush game over the last 2 years. Now, he hasn't played as many snaps because Penn State kind of rotates a lot of really talented pass rushers in there. You know that. But pretty much across the board, a lot of his pass rush metrics over the last 2 years, they only trail Leiatu Latu, who's pretty much our favorite guy in the draft. A 93.9 pass rush grade over 2 years is it's just filthy. 21.7% pass rush win rate. If you're getting over 20% with your pass rush win rate, you're on an elite, elite level. Chop Robinson, you know, I think should be based on his pass rush ability. Like to me, and that, so let's bring it to the on-field stuff. Dallas Turner from Alabama is like the premier speed rusher in this draft, right? And I think Jared Verse is kind of the premier power rusher. I think Chop Robinson's like halfway between him in those two talents. Yeah. I really do. And he can stand up. He can get in a three-point stance. He fits. I think he fits more defenses with his ability to stand up or go from a three-point stance than Dallas Turner does or even Jared Verse does. Because I look at Jared Verse as like a classic wide nine defensive end, right? I think Chop can do any of it. And I just think we haven't seen the sample size enough of snaps. Like he didn't put up gaudy sack figures this year. But if you look at the kind of the under the hood, the peripheral pass rush metrics, he's just as good a pass rusher as anybody in this draft. It would not shock me at all if he ended up the best pass rusher in this draft. And that's, if that's what we're looking for is elite pass rushers and closers, Chop Robinson's as good as any of them. I think he should be considered close to a top 20 pick. If I'm, you know, one of the teams I've been looking at him to is Tampa Bay at 26. I think he should absolutely be a consideration. They don't have an elite pass rusher like that. Todd Bowles kind of has to blitz and manipulate that sort of thing. If they got Chop Robinson in there, their front seven would get a lot better immediately.
Well, that you bring up a funny point because I have some familiarity with Todd, obviously having played for him. And Todd's defensive scheme fits Chop fits his defensive scheme from a personality standpoint due to what you just said, his flexibility and multiplicity in terms of where you can put him and how you can create mismatches for him to do what he ultimately does best. And that's, to me, that's the most interesting point when you're talking all of these numbers, right? What I look at is now it comes down to, even with Olu, fit and then confidence in development at the NFL level, right? There's so many organizations that struggle with development because you're sitting here really drafting a kid who's 20 to 22 years old, 23, 24 now with, you know, the whole COVID year thing, but still a man who, or a kid who's not quite even in his developmental prime, right? You have to have confidence in putting those guys in positions to be successful. A guy like Olu, like you said, I think talent, what he's done on the field, when you turn the tape on, fits. Now it's just going to come down to whether or not somebody in that draft board has that need and understands that, yes, he's going to fit into our scheme to do what he does well and then develop what else he doesn't necessarily do well. Maybe we didn't even see it, right? To your point, did the college scheme fit that? A guy like Chop, you know, not a ton of ball, like you said. He doesn't really have a ton of reps under his belt. But when you look at the physical attributes and you look at the product, it's like, hey, I'd take a guy like that in the top five, top 10, if I'm confident in my defensive line and my defensive coordinator and putting that guy in positions to be successful, because he's only going to continue to get better with the right confidence and the right variables around him. And that goes to another point. Two guys that I'm really excited about and I've been extremely high on and people are not, I think they're quote unquote sleepers from Penn State, is a guy like Theo Johnson, who's been in some really, really good tight end rooms. But when you watch his game and what he's done, when you turn on the tape, he can fit at the pro level as a guy who can be an inline blocker. He can be a threat in the pass game. He's got, you know, everything you need from a speed, separation, capability, but just really hasn't had a ton of opportunity at Penn State to be the guy, right? And maybe he won't be the guy in the league, but he's a really good football player. And when you're drafting people, you can't miss on football players. It's a very valuable asset at the league, and you need to find guys that you're going to be able to invest time and resources into to start making an impact on your team. So I think Theo is one of those guys. And another guy who didn't have a super stellar year from a statistics standpoint, but I also think is a really good football player and can make an impact top to bottom on an NFL roster, is Kalen King. Whether it's special teams, whether it's you know, getting different reps maybe at that nickel position or something. I think he's a guy who, when it comes to playing football, can make plays, be around the football, physical, and can overcome maybe some of the athletic deficiencies or size deficiencies that he does have. just with his natural instincts.
And this segment's brought to you by Family Clothesline. They kept us looking sharp all weekend. I'm currently wearing one of the Lulu polos. It's a Family Clothesline exclusive. Make sure you guys check out Family Clothesline for all of your Penn State apparel needs.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's starting with Theo there. The big thing with him, you go, okay, so from week 7 onward, he really started to turn it on last year. He led the nation from that point forward with 7 touchdowns, really became a red zone threat. You can see, I think the big thing why he's flown up our board, I've seen people with him as high as tight end 3, maybe even tight end 2 in this draft. It's tight end is as much dependent on athletic traits when you're trying to project future performance as any position, right? And, you know, I was looking at his measurables the other day. A ton of his measurables, most of them are above the 90th percentile. So those are guys in probably, I would say for Theo, probably somewhere between rounds 3 and 5 that you just take the chance on. You go, this guy's an athletic freak. If we mold him into what we need to, we can scheme him open and he can do the rest himself, right? I think it's a great point you make about Theo. Again, it's a sample size thing. He got better when he was more featured and he got opportunities, you know, in Penn State. I know there was some struggles offensively, especially late in the year against some of the better, you know, Michigan and Ohio State and things like that. But they were a better offense when he was involved, right? And his athletic traits are just so rare at his size that he very well could make an impact in the NFL, maybe initially as a second tight end. But I'll tell you what, you have those traits and all your traits are 90th percentile and above. You could easily be a starter on just physical talent alone. We've seen plenty of guys like that. And as far as Kalen King, I think the best argument is we saw him do it in 2022, right? He was a top 5 corner by our grading. He was above a 90 in our grading in 2022. 9 pass breakups. I think the biggest thing for me when I watch his tape is just he, because of the athletic shortcomings, you know, he ran a 4.6 at the combine and things like that. His technique just has to be pristine for him to succeed. And I thought his technique was a lot better in 22. For me, it's about staying in phase on vertical routes, right? I just think there are times this year where it's just guys can get a step on him vertically. And it's just the one thing you don't want to see. Like if I was making a comparison, like let's take Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama, who also isn't like an A-plus athlete like a couple of the other guys in the draft, but his technique is flawless. He may be the most technically sound corner in the class. Kalen King, with a year or two of NFL coaching and just being more consistently in phase, can be really, really good. We've seen it, right? Isn't the phrase, if we've seen you do it once, so you can do it again? That's where it's at. And I know this year it dropped off this year. Penn State's the entire group of corners, I felt, dropped off a bit this year, but they're all super talented in their own way, right? Even Daquan Hardy is an incredible athlete who just needs some refining. I think Johnny Dixon just needs a little weight on him just to get a little stronger. And Kalen King, it's just more consistent technique for me. He can be a really, really good football player in the NFL. He just, if he gets back to, I think there's going to be a lot of study done with him. What did he do differently in 2023 than he did in 22 technique-wise? Because athletically, sure, Maybe he won't be able to cover a Justin Jefferson or a CeeDee Lamb, but honestly, nobody can cover those guys anyway, right? And you can never have enough corners. Kalen King, I think he needs some coaching. If he's going to be successful, he just needs a coach to go, listen, this is where we need you to get. You need to have perfect footwork. If you're in press, you need to have perfect press technique. You need to be in phase at all times. You cannot, he's not, you know, certain guys are allowed false steps and they have makeup speed to get away with it, right? I think of a guy like Nate Wiggins at the top. I see that from sometimes false steps, but he's got 4.28 speed. Kalen King just doesn't have those luxuries, but you can win without luxuries. If he stays in phase, especially vertically, he certainly has a shot to succeed in the NFL.
Yeah. And you know where your help is, right? You know where your deficiencies are. You know where to funnel things. And that's just part of developing as a football player. And, you know, I learned that when I talked to Revis when he was at the back half of his career. He always talked to me about, I've just seen this so many times. I know I can eliminate so many things, and it just makes the game easier. He simplifies it. Another guy is Adisa Isaac. I really like his athletic traits. A little bit less refined than Chop is, but I think when you talk about top-end potential, long – strong for where he is now, can continue to get stronger. He's another guy, but yeah, there's a lot of good prospects coming out of Penn State. Tip of the cap to Chuck Losey and his crew in terms of development in the weight room and all those measurables. But, you know, ultimately I think the key for these guys, there's not that top end Saquon Barkley type of prospect coming out this year, Mike Gesicki. I think I think that a lot of it is dependent on where they land, how they get coached, and where they go from there.
Absolutely. And I agree with you on Isaac, and he's unique because he's a little bit light, but one of just four Power Five edge players this year to have an 80 plus run D grade and 9 sacks, right? He's very, it's surprising for him. I think he weighed in the high 240s, how good he is in run defense and just how balanced of a player he is. Right. And the only other three guys to do that are Leatu Latu, first round pick, Darius Robinson, very possibly a first round pick, and Ashton Gelati from Louisville, who could be a first round pick next year. So you're talking about a skill set. I think Isaac lines up very well. You know, people talk about Chris Braswell from Alabama being an early to mid second round pick. I think they're very similar players. They got high motors. They're really aggressive. They're fundamentally sound. You know what they are. Those two guys are stand up outside linebackers, and they're just rugged football players, right? They're just guys who make your front seven tougher. And I think Isaac, people are surprised with that at his size, but it's just, I look at him at around 247 pounds and Dallas Turner, say at 247 pounds, but I see two different types of football players, right? I don't see Turner. He's more the speed guy and the athleticism. Whereas Isaac, you see just a guy who almost, he just, the best way to describe it is he plays heavier than he is, right? He's just more rugged. He plays more physical than you would think for a guy that size. I like him a lot, too. I think a second round pick for him would make a lot of sense.
No doubt. Let's shift gears now to the spring game, current team, maybe some spring game recap. But, you know, I know you wanted to touch on Drew, and I've had a lot of both personal reverence for the situation he's in and kind of how he's developing and where I think he can go, just because, you know, I care about that position specifically at Penn State. But what do you got on Drew and maybe some of the narrative coming out of last season with him?
So I'm not a believer in any narrative where it's like, oh, it's Drew Aller's fault that Penn State's offense struggles at times, right? So we've got a set of things that we call basically the stable metrics, right? And they're more accurate predictors of quarterback performance moving forward, because they have the higher sample size, right? So the first thing that stands out with Drew easily is he's very safe with the football, right? He, you know, only 5 turnover worthy plays all last season, only 2 interceptions all last season, and the second best turnover worthy play rate at 1.1% behind Bo Nix. So everybody talks about, well, Bo Nix is, you know, he's the ultimate like game manager and he doesn't turn the ball over and he's so hard to beat because he doesn't beat himself. Drew Aller's the same way. Like, he just, the football, at times there's spotty accuracy, and in part, you know, we're going to get into, you know, the struggles of the wide receivers, especially, and things like that. And I think there's times where it's just, he's trying to be so perfect because his receivers kind of lack some talent and execution there. But first, he's safe with the football. Preventing negatives is arguably the biggest predictor of future performance, right? I would think you're unlikely to see all of a sudden Drew Aller is going to come out and throw 15 interceptions, right? Massive, massive. First thing you can't do is beat yourself. He doesn't turn the ball over at all. Second, I look at passing grade on non-play action, okay? So now you're not helped at all with the play call and linebackers stepping up and windows being bigger than they are. Can you just drop back and throw the football, right? 85.7 overall grade in those scenarios, 13th best in the country. So you're really talking about a guy who can drop back when everybody knows he's dropping back, throwing the football, and he's a borderline elite passer, right? And a lot of those, you know, 12 names ahead of him are the guys we're seeing, the Jaden Daniels and the Bo Nixes and the Michael Penixes and guys like that, where, you know, you're bordering on an elite passer, 17-1 touchdown to interception ratio on non-play action. He's dropping back and he's just throwing the football well, right? And a bigger sample size of that, you know, you think about that, like when a quarterback, let's say in the last 5 minutes, I need a game-winning drive. There's no play action. There's no screens. There's no BS. We have to drop back and throw the football and win the game. And he can do that, right? Another one, clean pocket grade. You know, everybody talks about, what can you do under pressure? Can he handle pressure, this and that? Well, the real answer is to have great pass protection and give him a clean pocket and just give him that good situation more often. And when he has a clean pocket, a 90 overall grade, which is what we consider elite, I believe it's somewhere in the top 15, 17 touchdowns and no interceptions, and a 0.3% turnover-worthy play rate, which is the best in the country. So think about it like this. Every 300 times he drops back in a clean pocket, he's puts the ball in danger once. It's just incredible. So when you get this guy a good situation around him, another one too, when he's got an 82.5 passing grade under 2.5 seconds time to throw, top 20 rate in the country. That's another one, because after 2.5 seconds, things get unstable. Guys have to improvise. You get to your second, third, fourth read. Things get weird, right? All of the stable metrics and things that should predict future performance, Aller's borderline elite or elite at. And I just see a guy that they need to make the centerpiece and build around him based on all of that.
Yeah. He's been unique, right? Because I think all of those things are very evident. And I've said that, like, he knows how to find his check down early. Like, that's something personally I struggled with. Like, I was always trying to make the big play, and he does so many good things. And it's like the things that he needs to do to take it to the next level are kind of those intangible conversations. And I framed it as this, like, when Penn State needed plays to be made, Drew hasn't necessarily made those, right? And whether you against the Ohio States, against the Michigans, when you need a play made that could potentially, and this is getting out of the metrics world, you know, influence your receivers to want to create that extra step and a half of separation, or want your defense to go a little bit harder to potentially give you a shorter field, right? It's almost those like intangible things with Drew. That's the conversation. And I think a lot of it has to do with putting him from an offensive scheme standpoint in positions to be successful more consistently, so that it allows him to kind of grow into that, if that makes sense. He's just a little bit of a conundrum. It's the system. It's all these things. And I think the conversation at Penn State with Drew ultimately comes down to the intangible belief top down in what they're doing, and then being able to roll the dice strategically at different points in the game, if that makes sense. Like, Drew, you know, hey man, like, it's 3rd and 8. We've been in a lull. Let's make a play. You know what I mean? Those things don't necessarily pop out consistently as the other stuff that he does. And I think the spring game's a perfect example. There's been this video that's been circulated about, you know, Drew's highlights and this and that. Like, you walk into spring games, dude, with like the smallest playbook known to mankind, you're not showing anything. Every school in the country is trying to gather some type of tape from that. And specifically with Penn State, you know, new offensive coordinator, they're really trying, because it's going to be a completely different presentation this year when you're prepping for them. So they really want to hold things tight to the vest. And when you look at it, there was a few things like where you saw him try to get to 3 and 4 and ultimately not complete those passes. He passed up an easy kick the ball to the flat on 3 or 4 different occasions where it could have been an efficient play, 4 yards, second and 6, you know, keep it moving, opens up the playbook. But those are all things that, like, me watching and understanding the entire picture, like, I'm excited about, because he's actually trying it in the game situation, fans in the stadium, adrenaline rolling, those types of things. And that's great. And it's perfect for the springtime. Like, I'm really excited with where he's at. And ultimately, I think it's a data point, but you have to dive into that data point. And really, we're going to get a better feel come week 1. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. You know, when you actually go in with a full game plan, trying to attack guys and what defenses do based upon what they, you know, based upon the tape that the coaches see and how they want to expose things and open up the playbook.
What's going on, folks? We are launching the Retain the Roar campaign here at State Media in partnership with Happy Valley United. This is extremely important to me personally and the entire program moving forward. I came to Penn State in some of the darkest times. I deeply care about this university and this football program. That is why I'm done talking. I'm going to lead by example, and I'm working to pull a bunch of other lettermen together to get behind this campaign. It is integral for us to participate in NIL, and not only participate, but dominate to match the expectations that we all have for this program. We're in it to win championships, so let's put our money where our mouth is. I'm taking the first step. I hope that you all follow me. Our goal is to raise $500,000 to close this spring transfer portal cycle and ensure that we retain the Roar.
Oh, absolutely. I think a couple of things you mentioned there. One, it's incredibly early in the process. I think to judge a guy by a spring game with a new offensive coordinator they've had for 3 months and I'm going to get into it here in what is a really complicated offense. Yeah. Okay. You know, And at two, and this is going to roll into this a little bit, is you mentioned about rolling the dice. Well, a lot of that is a philosophy from the top down. That's not just about the quarterback. You know, it's about the head coach. It's about the offensive coordinator. It's about the quarterback's coach. It's about just the entire philosophy being, hey, we're going to take shots, man. We're swinging for the fences, right? And you know, you look at what Andy Kotelnicki brings, because this, to me, is the most interesting storyline, at least for Penn State and possibly for the entire Big Ten, is how can he jumpstart this offense, okay? And there's a handful of things I see here. One, they take shots, man. I'll tell you. Well, I'll roll back to Kansas real quick. So Kansas, I would describe this offense, as innovative as it is, as it allowed Kansas to punch above their weight class, to punch above their talent level, okay? And just everything just blends together. There's a little bit of everything. There's RPO. There's play action shots. There's, you know, we're taking our chances. Even last year when they were playing with second and third string quarterbacks because of injuries, it didn't change much. They still came out with the same aggressive attitude, right? When you talk about average depth of target, okay, data point, you mentioned, hey, we want to roll the dice, man. We need more vertical shots, right? Last year, out of 133 teams, Penn State was 115th in average depth of target throwing the ball, right? It's so conservative. Kansas was 11th. And honestly, I look at Kansas and I don't know that there's a single NFL caliber weapon on their team, but they take shots down the field. You know, I'll roll into another thing. I talked about Drew in non-play action situations, which is fantastic, but I think they could help him out more with more play action, right? Talk about deep shots off play action. Average depth of target and play action, Penn State 57th, Kansas 7th. They're taking shots over the last 2 years. Kansas has 30 completions, 30 deep completions of 20 or more air yards in the last 2 years. Penn State has half of that at 15. It seems like they don't take enough shots, right? And Kansas, they made a point, no matter what, we're getting aggressive. Two things they do in this offense. They get horizontal in the run game. They stress you out constantly. Nothing, almost nothing stays between the hashes. Okay. And Kansas, we know they don't have a premium offensive line other than one guy who might be around a third round pick this year. You know, Penn State right now, they don't have a premium offensive line, and now they're losing three starters off of it, right? So they're going to have to work around it a little bit, and you got some serious guys to block in the Big Ten, Mason Graham and Jack Sawyer and all these guys. You know, they got some big dudes at Nebraska. I forget if they're on your schedule too, but you're going to run into big dudes in the Big Ten, and sometimes the answer is to just work around them and not block them and get to the outside. So you're going to see an emphasis on the outside run game, sideline to sideline, and then deep shots down the field in the play-action game. Another thing, Kansas, they didn't actually run as many RPOs as Penn State did, but they were the second most efficient team in the country when they did run their RPOs. Number two in EPA per play, and number one when they threw it out of an RPO look. It's not just like bubble screens, like, you know, you see certain teams run, oh, we run a boatload of RPOs, but it's just a bubble screen and a 5-yard hitch. They will get vertical off of an RPO. They stretch every bit of that rule where offensive linemen have that 3-yard box to get forward. And sometimes the officials let you go to 5 and 6 without seeing it, right? And you see it, like, they'll do an RPO with a seam shot into a single high. They'll do, if you think, you know, if they have a team they think runs a lot of boundary corner blitzes, they will have a go route from the X on the boundary. And if the quarterback sees, hey, boundary corner's coming, I'm just going to pull it and take the whole shot, whatever. It is a very dangerous offense when it gets rolling, but especially with the outside run game into the RPO game and the play action. And the last thing, Kansas ran more motion than any team in the country. This is just all the way around as modern an offense as it gets. So if anybody felt like, oh, Penn State's offense, it looks kind of old and stale and stuck in the mud, look out, because this offense right here is like the extreme, like, modern way that football is played now. Like, we think about the Miami Dolphins, right? It's like that. And if they can just, you know, it's a hard offense to learn with as much as is in it. So I don't take a whole lot of stock in the spring game, because it's a very complicated offense starting just with the formation.
And it's funny because, like, when Penn State started getting all that pressure to start taking shots, like, they just kept throwing go routes. And, like, you don't have that Justin Jefferson, AJ Green type guy. Like, you just don't. and you have a quarterback who's very turnover conscious, and I've said this, when you start seeing Drew throw the football beyond 20 yards, he either hits a dude like dead nuts perfect, or it's 5 yards above him or 5 yards out of bounds. Like, he just has a hard time giving guys chances. And to your point, when you start blending, especially with the two running backs they have in the backfield, like, it's not hard. If you have in Penn State's receiver room, you can say what you want. It's still a perennial top 10 program's receiving room, whether it's confidence based, whether it's not, they still have pieces that have certain things that are better than the other side of the ball, and how you put them in positions to be successful. Like you said, just short motions, even getting them off press and then being able to work off free releases and crossing releases, whatever it may be. There's so many things they could have done last year to make it easier that they didn't. And like, I got the chance to talk to Coach Kaltenicki before the spring game, and all of those things seem very – it's something Penn State fans should be really excited for. It's not going to be a flip of the switch by any stretch of the imagination, but if Drew can just trust in the process and continue to give the guys chances a little bit more, I think the scheme's going to be better. And then to your point, there's a lot of – As Coach Kaltenicki said, toys in the toy chest for him to start scheming up and play with. So when you get to that point, it really gives Drew a great opportunity to, I'm not even going to say turn the page, but continue to develop the way he needs to develop. And it's just unfair. You know, everyone expects a kid like that to just make up for all of those compensations. And I've said this before, I think the quarterback position is the most dependent position in sports. In a dependent game, it's the most dependent position in sports because of all those variables. So you bring up some great metrics. I think Penn State fans have a lot to look forward to. It sucks because you want to start seeing the immediate gratification everybody does. But I am, as I usually am, I'm on the let's pump the brakes here a little bit. Let's trust in the fact that we do have a very talented roster, and let's see how week one against West Virginia goes. Cause I think that's going to be a sneaky tough game. They got a kid over there that can pull the trigger a little bit, and you know, they're going to be ready to go up in Morgantown. So I think it's a great kickoff for us to really get a feel for where we're going to be heading into that meat of the schedule.
Yeah, I totally agree. And West Virginia, they should be a good team competing in a wide open Big 12. Garrett Green, the quarterback you mentioned, and I think the luxury, there's a couple of things actually. I'll start with the offense one more time. It's just the more I watched this offense, because I watched Kansas a decent amount during the year. We previewed a few of their games, but the more I was going into it, expecting to be a little worried that maybe they were dependent too much on quarterback run game. And I'm like, how does that fit with Drew? But it's really not like that, right? It's really more about just making quick decisions from the pocket, even in the RPO game. Now, there's a little element where he's going to have to tweak the run game because he liked to run speed option. He had some athletic quarterbacks at Kansas. That'll probably be taken out a little. Not that Drew's a bad athlete. He's just not like when you had
– I'm sorry to cut off, but here's the other thing that too is I talked to Coach Kaltenicki. Like, he's not going to stuff a square peg into a round hole, which is a breath of fresh air. And it's surprising that we're having this conversation, but I mean, from personal experience top down, that's something that sometimes gets missed, right? Coaches expect players to conform to what they want to do when actually the reality is the reverse, right? There's more than one way to skin a cat. If your kid can't necessarily be a massive threat in the run game, like there's a lot of other ways to put stress on the defense, leveraging the same type of principle and philosophy. And Kaltenicki is a teacher. At his core, he's a teacher and he's a problem solver. And to add emphasis to this point, like the onus falls on the grown men in this situation to put those kids in positions to be successful and then work with what you have.
Absolutely. And Kaltenicki is a master of working with what he has. And no matter how many years go by, and this was the fun part of watching this too, is one, Aller, he's a good quick rhythm passer, I think. And I think a lot of the one read rhythm and RPO game is going to fit him well, even if it replaces some of the speed option quarterback run element. But look, this offense and a lot of offenses look for football's been around for 160 years or whatever. And we have all these numbers and analytics and all these things. And since it started, offensive coordinators want to do two things. They want to outflank the defense to the outside, and they want to put guys in conflict. right? Put a linebacker in conflict in coverage or in play action with stepping up or stepping out to the stretch or whatever, or put a safety in conflict with a high low or a corner. Those are the two things. This offense, it gets outside and it stresses teams horizontally and it outflanks them. And it puts a ton of guys in conflict all the time, and not just the same guy. You see teams that run RPOs say, we just want to target this one linebacker, and that's the key to our offense. No, it's everybody. Yep. He's coming at you. If he sees a weakness, if he sees false steps in your game, he's going to find you, and he's got a ton of different looks and things that play off his run schemes to do it. But it's at its core, it's just the most modern version of those two things. He's trying to outflank the defense, and he's trying to put somebody – or even a couple of guys, a unit, in conflict. And when you think about those things, maybe he just has to lean a little bit more towards, okay, we're going to put guys in conflict in the passing game instead of, you know, there's not a lot of boot, there's not a lot of things like that, or even the speed option and the weird, like, Gus Malzahn type triple option things that he could probably do with a Jason Bean or a Jalen Daniels at Kansas. Drew's a little more classic, but he still has so many tools in the toolbox to use Drew's skill set as a quick rhythm passer, as a one read passer, as a straight drop vertical play action passer. I think his first touchdown of the year, I don't remember if it was play action, but I just remember seeing him take a 7-step drop and make that throw. I thought that looked like an Andrew Luck type of throw against West Virginia. I think it was his first touchdown of the year on like a deep over.
Yep.
And I just go, how do you, this guy with this arm talent from the pocket, you can ask him to throw any ball, and he's got way more arm talent. If he doesn't have, you know, the feet that Kotelnicki's guys at Kansas did, he's got way, way more arm talent. He could make throws. I'll bet Kotelnicki's drawing up new stuff just with Drew's arm talent, deep overs. And like you mentioned, the deep ball, when he hits it, he really hits it, man. That throw against West Virginia, there was a couple against Indiana where I just go, wow, this guy should be so, so much better in this offense than he currently is. And it's in there. Like the fact that he went through all those struggles and still only threw two interceptions and just refused to turn the ball over. And that's the luxury too. When you don't turn the ball over, they're going to have a top 10 defense again this year, when even losing guys like Chop and Kalen King and Adisa, and that's the luxury. Is realistically, Penn State's goal is not to score 45 points. Now, if they do, fantastic. Great. If they get to 27, they should win every week.
45. And 45 makes them really dangerous.
45, you'd be winning the title at you'd be winning a national title at 45 a week. But I look at this team and I go, if they hit 27, 30, if they salt it away. And two guys we haven't mentioned at all when we talk about this outside run game and everything Kotelnicki can do, Allen and Singleton, they could tee off in this offense.
Yep.
Because it's not just, oh, just run downhill and use your ability in the B gap to. No, there's like, you know, you talk about when guys need to be left unblocked. There'll be times where there's an option element. The RPO and the space it creates, we've seen it in Texas's offense, that just the threat of an RPO on every play just creates space in the front seven. Allen and Singleton, man, that's, you know, Max, my co-host, and I on the PFF College Show, we've talked about this running back class that's coming back to school. Yeah. And I think Catron Allen and Nick Singleton get a little forgotten about when you talk about Ohio State got Quinshon Judkins and all these other backs. These two backs are as good as anybody in the country. And now they're in a scheme that just gets them into space to use their ability out in open space. That's insane.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, I know it's not sexy, but they got probably the deepest tight end room in college football. And that gets fun too when you can start leveraging guys like Tyler Warren out split outside. You know what you were saying about offensive football. Coach O'Brien told me this when I was 18 years old, right when I got on campus. It comes down to numbers, leverage, and matchups, and it's never left me. At the end of the day, you got numbers, do what you got to do. If you got leverage, great, helps make your job easier. And if you got a guy who's just better than everybody else, figure out a way to put them in advantageous matchups and go play. So, you know, it is exciting. And like I said, you know, I know it's hard for Penn State fans, but like we haven't even gotten a taste of it yet. And it's going to be really exciting come week one. So listen, Dalton, this is great. Do you have anything else? Because I think that this is plenty for fans to chew on, and we'll make sure we try and get back on this, because I think this was really good.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, as far as the numbers go, I think when you're talking about, you've got, look, Penn State, and I know there's a lot of questions, a lot of side eyeing and all this stuff, and now Oregon and all those West Coast teams are in the Big Ten, but there should still be a lot of optimism. Look, don't take too much out of a spring game. Don't ever take too much out of any spring game, honestly. It's a glorified practice, right? And they're very early in the process. So I think this offense is going to come along maybe later in the season, maybe not. It's not going to look perfect week one. This is a complicated offense. There is a lot of window dressing in this offense that has to be practiced over and over. The amount of reps that it takes to master this offense might take the entire season, but I think the final product of this team is going to be really, really good. And again, they have the luxury. They're going to be a top 10 defense because they're always a top 10 defense, right? And I'll tell you, I mean, I think should be excited for the season, should be excited for all these guys in the draft to see where they land. And this is going to be a fun week. Does this feel like a more electric draft than usual too? This is going to be an awesome week just this week, man.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. There's a lot of really good, you know, the product just keeps getting better. And it's going to be fun to watch. And I know our guy AB is going to be, Adam Brenneman's going to be down there. So, it's definitely fun, but like I said, man, I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to doing more of this.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.